Record. All right, cool. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. Yes, I said addict.
I'm Ryan.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm really proud to be sitting here. I'm glad to be here. I count, never had a legal drink. It's like probably one of the two or three groups in New York that's like responsible for keeping me alive and keeping me sober. You know, when I first came in, the members of this group, you know, dealt with me and all my bullshit. I was such a badly behaved recovering alcoholic when I first got here. And like, I had a bunch of big brothers and sisters who were like, yeah, that's why you're crazy. Have a seat. Shut up. little about me. Born and raised in Brooklyn, out in Sheepshead Bay. I hope none of you move out there. Just because I don't want it to change. The moment any of you fly sexy people moves out to Sheepshead Bay is the moment I'm just gonna burn it all on the fucking ground and stuff like that. Shit. Somebody stay in Brooklyn. Born and raised here. I had so much contempt for alcohol and for alcoholics until I got drunk for the first time when I was 13, at which point I was like, yeah. Bud Light, Bud Ice, not Bud Light. Rigorous honesty, Bud Ice. In my neighbor's backyard on like the one night my mother left me alone. And it was like, I mean, I loved drinking. I didn't drink that often. Compared to a lot of other people who frequent this group, I am kind of a late bloomer because I was raised by the most insane rageaholic woman you'll ever meet in your life. Well, she's not that way anymore, but if you knew me in high school, you would have been scared shitless of my mother. I didn't drink often, but when I did, when I had an opportunity to, I just took it right to the face. And like, regardless of what everybody else I was hanging out with was doing, like, I remember, like, I can count on one hand the number of times I got wasted in high school before senior year. And I'd be hanging out with people, and they'd all be content to just hang out. And I'd be the one, like, sneaking my dad's bottle of fucking rum into school and being like, yeah. You know, I had the ism long before the alcohol set in. I hated myself. Everything was wrong with me. I wasn't blonde enough. My hair wasn't floppy enough. I started sprouting chest hair by the time I was like 12. And like, we didn't have scruff back then. It wasn't cool to be hairy back then. Back then it was fucking queer as folk. It was shaved, plucked, and fucking moisturized, okay? There was no room for chest hair. I shaved my shit down. And my excuse was that I was on the fucking swimming team, but I quit that shit freshman year. And I just hated myself. The self-loathing was like insane. And alcohol helped. Alcohol helped me forget who the fuck I was. Alcohol helped me forget that, I mean, I just didn't give a fuck when I was drinking. Ecstasy at senior proms. I was that gay kid that all the girls took to their fucking senior proms. So I was like, listen, pay for the tuxedo rental and the Mitsubishis, which was the brand of ecstasy that was hot at the time. And I'm down. And so that's what we would do. It would be like prom, ecstasy, Sound Factory, Limelight, hot tub in Staten Island invariably. Like something tacky like that. The house, the upbringing was very, on the one hand, it was like really charmed. My parents worked their asses off for us. My dad ran into burning buildings for a living, to put braces on his kids' teeth and to send us to Catholic school and to keep us in a safe neighborhood. And my mother made gowns for mob princesses. Like, they were, while babysitting and then working for like the Board of Education, which she's been doing for the past 20 years. My parents worked really hard. They were working class people. And my upbringing was pretty sweet. I mean, it was abusive, but no, it's true. Like, my mom was like, you know, my mother was crazy. I mean, We weren't allowed to watch Mommy Dearest in my house because the resemblance was just too fucking close. But y'all know what that is?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Everybody else, Google it. I know the straight boys are like, what? So Lots of homophobia. Lots of homophobia.
Whoa.
The word faggot was my nickname for I don't know how many years growing up from my parents. I love that Johnny White is laughing at that right now. You fucking scumbag. Listen to me. All the Brooks Brothers in the world isn't going to be trash. Anyway. Anyway. You know, it was a really homophobic household. It was very Puerto Rican. There was, I mean, not to be all like, whatever, Puerto Ricans are homophobic, but my family was very homophobic. I was in the theater. I auditioned to get into Boston University. I got into Boston University for acting. I got into NYU for like playwriting and screenwriting, and I decided Boston because Boston was out of New York. Like, I just was one of those idiots who grew up in New York and thought you could get by somewhere else. No. No. Boston. I mean, the subway shut down at 1 o'clock in the morning. Everybody is wasted, and somehow they have the most stringent underage drinking laws you could possibly imagine. It was like, no wonder I started doing crystal meth when I was in school. It was easier to cop a fucking bag of crystal than it was to get a goddamn bottle of gin without sleeping with somebody. And honeys, I did that. It was like, I got to school. My major was theater, and after the first week, I sort of changed that, and my double major became like drinking and casual sex with a minor in substances. I did not know who I was. I hated myself. I was very uncomfortable in my skin. I was very self-conscious. Everybody was richer than I was. Everybody was more focused than I was. Everybody had, you know, their eye on the ball, and I was just a fucking maniac. It was like, I was like a bottle rocket with like the stick broken off of it. Just sort of light it and just go wherever, you know what I mean? And that's the way I was. It was there that I really, really started to drink the way I wanted to drink. Failing out of classes, completely fucking over people who were depending on me, like scene partners, collaborators, things like that. It was pretty bad. The summer after that was when I started doing crystal meth, and then I lasted like one more semester in Boston. I was at an orgy when 9/11 happened. I'm dead fucking serious. Somebody turned off the porn and turned on the television, and I looked at the television and I was like, why is King Kong playing on CNN? And I was high. I'd been up for like 2 days on crystal meth, drinking gin and smoking crystal meth, and the World Trade Center was being attacked, and like, you know, they were getting all these street shots, and I remember one of the things that I saw was my dad's fire truck crushed by a beam, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? And like, that was like one of the scariest times in my life, and after that I was like, I want to go home. Like, I hate this town, life is short, I'm a drug addict, I need to get out of here, I'm wasting my money. After that semester, I did not go back to Boston, and I lived through, I think, probably one of the darkest periods in my drinking. I was 20 years old. No, I was 19 years old. I spent my days drinking 99-cent tall boys of Coors Light, smoking shitty pot out of bongs made out of plastic Coke bottles, in a bathrobe in my backyard next to a pool that I never covered, so all the leaves just fell into it and it became a swamp that was like fed into like dead squirrels and used condoms. And I'm like, I don't fuck in this backyard, so I don't know what. Uh, 19 years old in a bathrobe in my backyard in the middle of the day. Wishing I had math homework. Wishing I knew what the hell I was doing with my life. That's the thing. That was the thing about alcoholism that like really sort of clinched it for me. It wasn't all the times that I, you know, swore I was going to go home the night I went out and wind up getting home 2 days later. It wasn't the times that I, you know, started off a night looking at a guy and being like, oh no, but then, you know, I'd get drunker and drunker and I'd find out he had drugs and, oh no, it turned into, oh, what train line, what line do you live on, you know? What is the old saying that I heard in these rooms? You know, circumstances get worse quicker than you can lower your standards. That was my life. I was 19 years old and it was awful. It was totally terrible. I felt really lost. Like, that was the thing. Like, I felt lost. I didn't have God in my life. And that was really the thing. It's like I did not have any kind of light in my life. I tried to get sober that winter. It didn't stick. I went to my first 12-step meeting stoned. I went to all of the 12-step meetings stoned then. And then I tried to get sober again, and it stuck a little bit more. I went to an outpatient rehab, and I was like, I don't really like these people, so I'm going to start going to AA. And I said, my first AA meeting, my first young people's AA meeting ever was the Tuesday night step meeting when it used to be at the fucking temple on 14th Street and 1st Avenue. Holler if you remember that fucking location. Yes, thank you. That was my first meeting. That was where I met Fran M. It's where I was introduced to my first sponsor. I stayed around long enough for things to get okay. I got a job at Barnes & Noble. I rekindled a relationship with an ex-boyfriend. I landed a gig producing and writing with a little theater downtown. You know, I don't know. Like, I mean, I could have sworn there was more stuff. Like, things started to, like, look up for me after 5 months in the rooms. And so I thought, you know, I think I got everything I need. I think I'm good. And so I was at a party, and I started smoking pot. I smoked pot at the party. I relapsed after, like, 5 months of things going well. And, you know, and then I went back out. And, oh, my God, that relapse was slow, and it was awful, and it taught me everything I needed to know about my unmanageability. During that relapse, I tried making out charts. I'd be like, okay, on Monday, you're going to smoke one bud, you're going to have 2.5 stems of mushrooms, you're going to drink X amount of fucking Budweiser, and da-da-da, like, and so on. And, like, those charts would just be like, I still have them. I kept those shits, because I was like, yo, ever you think about drinking again, open this envelope, and, like, those charts are in there, and pictures of me, like, 50 pounds underweight, or, like, 50 pounds lighter than I am now, like, just, like, crystal face for days. I'm so lucky I have all my teeth. It was, like, I mean, that period was dark, and it was awful. Everything that I lined up for myself in my life, it started to fall away, and I just had a moment of clarity. I had a moment of clarity on Gay Pride Sunday. On a rooftop on 8th Street looking down at the parade. This is how it is. For my If they ever make a cheesy Lifetime movie about my life, this is going to be the first scene. Like, the parade is over. They're cleaning up 8th Street. And I'm standing there, and I'm a little bit buzzed. And I'm looking at all these people trying to cram their way down Christopher Street. And I'm trying to figure out... I'm standing there trying to figure out how I'm going to find the crystal and how I'm going to find the party and how I'm going to do this and do that and da da da. And I literally heard a voice in my head that just gave me all these instructions, and it basically boiled down to, like, go home, you're done. Go to a fucking meeting tomorrow. And, like, that's what I did. And I went to midnight. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be the craziest motherfucker in the room at midnight. I knew enough about AA in New York to know, like, go to midnight, you'll be safe there. It's like, clearly Atlantic Group for your first AA meeting. Please. Have I asked committed? No, it's not true. Lovely people there. Anyway. I was just very self-conscious, so I went to midnight first. And I knew to come back here. You know, I knew to come back to Legal. I knew to come back to Young People's AA. And I did. And I fell in with some really amazing... rowdy, happy, enthusiastic, recovering alcoholics. I look back on the time that I tried to get sober, and there was, like, a short list of things that I did not do. I did not go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I did not listen to my sponsor. I had one, but I lived to defy him. I did not make an honest attempt at the steps. I did not get a service commitment after 90 days. And... I did not have a home group. So those were all the things I didn't do. And I did them when I came in. I came June 28th, 2004 is my sober date. I have not had a drink since. Or a drug since, or anything since. And, you know, I came in and, you know, it took a few years for me to sort of get settled. and to sort of get grounded. You know, I had to work all the amphetamines out of my system, and I had to sort of learn to sit with myself. And, you know, this is the part where it gets really hard to talk about it, because it's like, I've been sober longer than I was drinking. I'm at that point now where I'm like, whoa, like, how do you even talk about 9.5 years worth of fucking life? Like, I mean, when I started this qualification, I was like, God, just, I want to be honest. I don't want to lie. I don't want to fucking throw shade at anybody. And of course, I failed at that. But I also said, I was like, help me figure out how to encapsulate how joyous and happy I am to be sober. I'm not always joyous and happy in life. Life has been fucking life. It has been dark. It has been challenging. I've grown a lot. You don't grow unless you go through, like, all the hard shit. There's been a lot of hard shit. I'm so grateful to be sober. I'm so grateful that I got another chance at this. I don't think I would be dead if I hadn't got sober. I don't think I would be dead, because I'm one of those assholes that stays alive and drinks his face off and makes life miserable for everyone else around me. I'm one of those people. That's what's in my blood. I know this. So I don't think I'd be dead, but I know I'd be really unhappy. And I know that I'd still feel lost. I don't feel lost anymore. You know, I've been through some hard shit. I've been through some challenging situations where I've been like, how am I gonna survive this? And you know, even in those situations, I don't really feel lost. You know, one of the things I can attribute to my continued sobriety, oddly enough, in a weird way, totally unexpected, conventions. Yeah. Getting really, even as just like a guest of a convention, like getting involved in, you know, something so big and something so happy and something so, like, I mean, I was one of those kids who was like, I mean, I don't think I slept at all the first convention I went to. I found the one 40-year-old bodybuilder at that convention and his brains out. And I was like a lunatic. I ate all the pancakes. But I heard Christy C, who lives in Worcester, Mass. And I loved her story, and I connected with that so much, and I thought, you know what? I want to stay sober so I can come back and do this again next year. And I did. Sobriety has been amazing. Even at, like, it's been a fucking bloodbath at times, but it's still been pretty awesome. I was sort of, you know, doing as best as I could in the first few years of my sobriety. I made some really good friends. I you know, learned how to be a boyfriend incrementally from relationship to relationship. And then something happened. Like, there was one point, oh my God, I went back to school. Okay, no, seriously, getting sober and going back to school are like the two best decisions I ever made in my life. Oh my God, I cannot, and I would not have been able to accomplish that without getting sober, but like, I went through a point. There was a point in my sobriety a few years ago when, like, my gang all relapsed, and the guy that I was dating, a guy. The day I was gonna break up with him, I started the conversation with "What's up?" instead of "I need to break up with you." I said, "What's up?" And he was like, "I need to get sober." And I was like, fuck. Because instead of breaking up with him, I 12-stepped him. And he hung around for a little while, but he relapsed, my friends relapsed, and I just sort of looked at my own program and I thought, you know, you've had like 3 sponsors, you haven't made it all the way through the steps, you need to really step your shit up. You have to work this program. You need to work the program, not the room. You know? And so I found the sponsor that I have now. I picked my sponsor because he reminded me of my big brother, because he scared me, and because I knew that he knew the big book. That's why I picked him. And grabbed him outside this meeting and asked him to be my sponsor. He said yes, thank God. you know, I started going through the steps, and I started growing, and I started to get more and more grounded, and you know, it was a long process getting through all 12 steps with him, just because I was in school and I've always been really sort of an insane workaholic. Oh my God, and I'm a fucking writer. It's like perfect isolation, just bleh, you know, but by myself, twerking in my bedroom. you know, we got through all 12 steps. I didn't, you know, relapse. I feel like throughout my entire, through all these years, it's been like a continual process of like giving my will over and over again, you know, and meeting God over and over again, trying to live in service without ego, trying to live in service, you know, without pride. Like, no one elected me RoboCop just because I have time. You know what I mean? Like, I just know that. I know that if I can't fucking be spiritual while I'm doing service, I need to not do service or just, like, do service in a different way. A lot of my attitudes and outlooks have changed. it's been a really amazing time. Most recently, it's been like God has been like cooking me this really fucked up lasagna, where like he's stacking really awesome things on top of really horrible things. Within a year, Hurricane Sandy took out my mother's house. I landed a really amazing residency with like a dream theater company. My father died of alcohol-related illnesses, and I inked a deal to work with another dream theater company. All the while, I stayed employed, I stayed sober, I met a guy that I love. He doesn't know that I hope he knows that I love him. I haven't told him that I love him. Because, not because I'm afraid, but because I literally thought about this, and I was like, you know what, love's a fucking verb. You know what I mean? The moment you start saying I love you, the moment it starts to become cheap, because then you have to say it after every time the motherfucker brings you a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? Thank you. I just trying to live in love and have that, remember that love is a verb, and just sort of bring that into every interaction in my life, in these rooms, outside of these rooms. You know, when my dad died this year, he died like 2 months ago, and he was sick for a month, and I basically drove people around and bought everybody sandwiches, and I got to stay with him in his hospice overnight a few times, which was nice in its own weird, fucked up way. I mean, in his last days, unfortunately, I spent my time helping him onto a commode, wiping his ass, and fighting with his whore of a girlfriend. You know, and it was hard. But I'm really grateful that I was sober for that, and I'm really grateful that I knew that I had to take care of myself. You know, you put the oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on the people around you, and I knew that I had to stay in touch with certain people, get to meetings when I could, and try and use these tools, practicing principles in all of our affairs. That's, you know, just trying to keep that in mind. I've been sad, and I've been slower. I've been operating a little bit more slowly than I'm used to. I figured out at some point that I just couldn't will my way through the grief, but I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful that I got this program. I've literally seen the long, slow death that is the alcoholic death. And I know that I'm not immune to that just because I've seen it. And I know that I'm not immune to that just because I'm sitting here tonight. I have today. That's the thing that I'm going to wrap up with. If you're new and you're like 14 or however the fuck old you are, and you're sitting there and you're worried about getting through the rest of your life without drinking or doing drugs, I'm going to say this. Don't worry about getting through the rest of your life without drinking. Just worry about getting through the rest of the night. Every day. Just get through the day. And eventually the obsession will lift. It lifted for me. You know, I have to, I'm more concerned lately about, I mean, for years it's been more about living in spirituality than it's been about white knuckling it through a drink, because the obsession goes away if you stay and if you do the work and if you build a life for yourself that doesn't revolve around alcohol and drugs. If you're not new, live in love, live in service, look after your gang, you know, come around as often as you can. I say come around as often as you can. I agree. My schedule has kept me from this meeting for like months, but you know, just keep it green and learn to speak up. You know, when people are new, or no, when people start to accrue time, it's like taking care of yourself and using the tools in crisis can take on a weird, complicated, different form. It's like we're not necessarily taught how to do that, but you know, it's important to sort of know how to sustain this. So just, I guess, keep it simple and keep it green. Thank you for my sobriety. I owe my life to never had a legal drink. So thanks for being here.